Hello, it's Debbie, back again with the Decatur Herald in Review, June 1st, Wednesday, 2016. Starting out with crime and courts. Of course, on page one, we'll do all the, looks like there's four articles here on page one. Special prosecutor appointed to investigate allegations against Gleason. This is by Allison Petty, an H&R staff writer, Decatur. A special prosecutor was formally appointed Tuesday to investigate allegations of misconduct by city manager Tim Gleason. The investigation relates to Gleason's use of a police car and driver on May 7, 2015, to reach the St. Louis airport for a personal trip following his appearance at the Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce State of the City breakfast. Editorial comment. I thought I'd read about this before, but I guess this just continues. End of comment, sorry. The Macon County State's Attorney's Office filed the request for the special prosecutor, which was granted by a judge. First Assistant State's Attorney Nicole Kroenke wrote that prosecuting Gleason could be a conflict of interest for the office or create the appearance of impropriety. Gleason's use of the car and driver has been a central point in former Decatur Police Chief Brad Sweeney's lawsuit against the city. Sweeney alleges that Gleason fired him on February 4th in part for objecting to the use of the car. Gleason declined to comment Tuesday. Gleason has previously acknowledged that he took the police car and driver to attend a scheduled trip to California for an event related to his son's Army service. He has said former Mayor Mike McElroy, who died in July, told him to do so. The appointment Tuesday comes nearly 2 weeks after former Decatur Police Chief Mark Bartholomew filed a petition in Macon County Circuit Court requesting a special prosecutor to be appointed to investigate Gleason. Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott said at the time that he had referred the information about Gleason to the Illinois State's Attorney's Appellate Prosecutor's Office, along with a report related to alleged eavesdropping and official misconduct by Sweeney. However, the Appellate Prosecutor's Office only considered itself appointed to the Sweeney case, according to the response Scott filed Tuesday to Bartholomew's petition. The process began in March, when Scott received reports of an Illinois State Police investigation into Sweeney's actions. Shortly after, Sweeney's attorney sent information about Gleason's use of the police car and asked for criminal charges to be filed against Gleason. The state's attorney's office has a potential conflict of interest in both cases, Scott wrote. He filed a motion for appointment of a special prosecutor and forwarded all the materials, including those related to Gleason. On May 18th, the day after Bartholomew filed his petition, the appellate prosecutor's office advised Scott that the motion he filed specifically addressed only the conflict with Sweeney. Because of this, the office, quote, had technically not been appointed special prosecutor regarding the allegations against Tim Gleason, unquote. The appellate prosecutor wanted to decide whether to pursue charges against Sweeney before accepting the Gleason case, Scott wrote. The office was slated to announce that decision in a letter that has not been filed as of Tuesday afternoon. On Friday, the appellate prosecutor agreed to accept the Gleason case. Quote, the process of obtaining independent review by a special prosecutor as to the allegations against Tim Gleason was initiated well in advance of the present petition, Scott wrote, calling Bartholomew's petition moot. Bartholomew said Tuesday that he thought Scott had done the right thing by obtaining the appointment of a special prosecutor in the Gleason matter. I wish that had been done earlier. That would have avoided my action, he said. Meanwhile, a judge still is considering whether to dismiss Sweeney's lawsuit against the city of Decatur. Attorneys for both sides argued that the legal standing for the case in a hearing last week. Macon County Circuit Court Judge A.G. Weber IV said Thursday he planned to take the arguments under advisement and issue a decision, quote, in a reasonably near future. End of article. Continuing to education, school board names interim superintendents, again by Valerie Wells. Decatur. The Decatur School Board met early Tuesday morning to name Michael Dugan and Bobby Williams co-interim superintendents effective immediately. Superintendent Lisa Taylor has 48 accumulated sick days and vacation time, said Board President Sherry Perkins, and because summer is critical planning time for the next school year and Taylor's new job with the Hayworth School starts July 1st, the board decided to have Dugan and Williams begin immediately. We just want to carry on, Williams said. We have a lot of things to carry forward to get the schools ready. The two have been assistant superintendents and work well together, Dugan said. When the board asked us to take this position, we wanted to make sure we could continue on with what Lisa's already started, Dugan said, adding with a chuckle. I said I'd only do it if it was with Bobby, and she said she'd only do it with me. We'll do it together. Because each has different areas of expertise, Williams said. They'll sit down together and determine which areas each will be primarily responsible for, though decisions will still be made as a team. The reason for naming interims was to keep things operating smoothly while the board conducts a search for a new superintendent, which was the advice given to them by the Illinois Association of School Boards. A search could take several months. The co-interims will serve until a new superintendent is hired and begins work. The board voted to pay Dugan a stipend of $4,500 a month for the additional responsibility, while Williams will receive a $20,000 lump sum payment after her retirement and last paycheck is issued. The reason for that, Perkins said, is that Williams has already filed her retirement documents, which educators do a considerable time in advance, and the teacher's retirement system rules prevent the board from raising her pay after those papers have been filed in order to keep things equitable. The board's solution was the lump sum payment, which Williams said was fine with her. The board also voted to increase board secretary Melissa Bradford's stipend by $12,000 a year. Bradford also serves as the superintendent's secretary. Other administrators named at the meeting include Diane Brandt, who will serve as principal of the Durfee Magnet School, Annette Ballou, principal of Oak Grove School, and Mark Hughes, a special education administrator for the Macon-Piatt Special Education District. End article. From the top of the page for the Herald and Review, it had a picture of of Brad Emmel working on stuff with his area, is Sullivan Man Caught Up in Storms. The headline reads on the paper, Caught Up in the Storm. This is by Dawn James, Lee News Service writer. Sullivan. Growing up in a farming family, Brad Emmel learned at an early age what it's like to live at the mercy of the weather. He can also remember a few storms that terrified him as a child, as well as the movie Twister. With that in mind, it's no surprise that the software engineer developed a passion and interest in storms that led him into storm spotting at the age of 16 with the Emergency Service Disaster Agency in Sullivan. His interest continued into his college years at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale as he decided to join the City of Carbondale's Emergency Management Association. 5 years later, when he started his computer programming career in Mattoon, he also joined the Coles County Emergency Management Association. He has nearly 20 years of experience as a storm spotter. Today, he is a trained spotter with the National Weather Service. He said the employees at the National Weather Service in Lincoln know him. This same passion and love of a beautiful storm gifted him an entrepreneurial spirit in the creation of a storm-chasing video device, the Mesodome. So the pictures were of these different mesodomes. Emil said the idea was generated after he and a friend spent about 10 days chasing storms in the Great Plains area several years ago. The computer company he had worked with failed financially and they decided to make the trip. He said they witnessed probably 40 to 50 storms in the regions between South Dakota and Roswell, New Mexico. It was a great experience and a lot of fun. We slept in our cars. You have to be in love with the open road to be able to do something like that. While chasing storms, the software engineer slash farmer said he realized that tornadoes move fast. He said it was difficult to get a good video by hanging out the window. He said with the Mesodome, the storm chaser can just drive toward the storm, The video camera rotates 360 degrees, he said. In addition, he shared the basis for his device's name, Meso, in Mesodome, stands for mesocyclone, which is the parent rotation in a thunderstorm that can produce a tornado. So mesocyclone is the parent rotation in a thunderstorm that can produce a tornado. There's nothing like this, he said. He offers three versions of the unit on his website, mesodome.com. The unit provides an effective way of recording tornadoes. I'm the only person who's manufacturing this for storm chasing. Obviously, this is a very niche-based unit. This unit, initially created with the storm chaser in mind, has become a favorite with national television stations and the Weather Channel. His primary customers, he said, were storm chasers in the Dixie Alley region. This week, his client base was extended into another area as he was getting ready to deliver four mesodomes to be used at the University of Alabama, Huntsville, for the purpose of government research. He said he started making the mesodomes in his garage about 4 or 5 years ago. People with the right media contacts can sell high-quality tornado video for as much as $500 a second, he said. I realized it'd be more profitable to sell the equipment that captures the best video instead of fighting the crowds for the best shot. The software is the key to all of it, he said. It integrates GPS, a gyroscope, magnetometer, mathematics, a video camera, and a Windows-based joystick. Mesodomes are mounted on the chaser vehicle and allow the storm spotter to monitor it from inside via a laptop and the joystick. The vehicle becomes the tripod, his website says. The Weather Channel has purchased three of these units, and 90% of his business goes to television stations, he said. End of that article. And finally, from the last article on the first page is state and regional. Exelon's nuclear plant bill called dead, but some still pushing it. This is from the Lee News Service, comes out of Springfield. A bill aimed at helping Exelon's money-losing nuclear plants near Clinton and the Quad Cities likely won't make it out of the spring legislative session, but the company hasn't yet confirmed it will close the two plants. The general consensus is it's dead for this session, said Henry Marquard, Director of Government Relations for the Quad Cities Chamber of Commerce. He said he'd spoken with an aide to the bill's main sponsor, State Senator Dunn Trotter, Democrat, Chicago, as well as to others in the Capitol. The News Gazette of Champaign also reported that Trotter has pulled the plug on the bill, proposing what Exelon calls the next-generation power plan, saying time had run out with the scheduled end of the spring legislative session on Tuesday. We have not received any official word yet from Exelon, said Clinton Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Marion Broussard in a statement Tuesday. We would also urge our government officials to realize the seriousness of this issue and address it accordingly. Broussard said the chamber will continue supporting the efforts to keep the Clinton Power Station open. State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican Muhammad, whose district includes the Clinton plant, also called on Tuesday for the legislature to act. As the legislature goes into overtime session yet again, it's time for the Senate Democrat majorities to quickly finalize negotiations and send this bill over to the House, he said in a statement issued Tuesday. Exelon had said that if legislation wasn't passed by the end of the spring session, it'd close its plant near Clinton in 2017 and the one near Quad Cities in 2018. Exelon said the legislation would put its nuclear plants on an even footing with other low-carbon emission energy providers that receive subsidies. The bill also would establish a surcharge on utility customers that would help the nuclear plants, which Exelon said has lost more than $800 million over the past 7 years, and change how some consumer rates are calculated. Consumer groups and others have objected to the legislation, calling it a bailout for a profitable company. End of that article. Continuing to the local section, news, studies set to look at potential historical sites near proposed beltway. This is by Ryan Boyles, another H&R staff writer, Decatur. Local officials will await one more look into potential archaeological sites along the planned Macon County Beltway route before the long-discussed plan can come to fruition. A memorandum of understanding among the Federal Highway Administration, Illinois Department of Transportation, Macon County, and the Illinois State Historical Preservation Officer that would investigate sites of potential historical relevance was approved Tuesday night by the Macon County Finance Committee. Studies conducted by the Preservation Officer and the federal and state departments have identified 9 archaeological sites that represent historic Native American and Euro-American sites that could be affected by the Beltway project. The memorandum would allow additional archaeological surveys and test excavation to be conducted to determine whether the site would be eligible for the National Register of Historic Places. If any sites are deemed eligible, the multiple agencies would then attempt to avoid and minimize potential impact. If impact cannot be avoided, then a data recovery excavation will be conducted by IDOT. No timeline for the work was provided in the memorandum, though Macon County Highway Engineer Bruce Beard said after Tuesday's approval that it's one of the last hurdles to leap before the Beltway construction can fully begin. It's the big one we've been waiting on, he said. In other business, the county will seek to continue its agreement with the village of Long Creek that allows off-duty deputies from the county sheriff's office to be employed by the village. Those deputies will be considered employees of the village during their shift and will be provided a police vehicle and insurance coverage by the village. The agreement comes up on an annual basis, and the sheriff's lieutenant, Jonathan Butts, said it's been successful for the several years they have done it with the village. End of the article. Next, probation employees go inside for a cause. This is by Danette Beckett, an H&R staff writer. Decatur, Clint Walker understands the importance of volunteering. We all live in the same community, said Walter, an adult probation officer. It's good to have our faces out and about. Walter and other Macon County Probation Department personnel spent a morning last week preparing the Decatur-Macon County Animal Shelter for a Saturday, June 4th open house. The event will have family activities encouraging pet adoption. About 20 probation department workers were on hand to clean and organize the building and pet the animals too. The animal shelter is another one of the agencies that's part of the umbrella of the county, said Ralph Ponch, an employee of the Macon County Court Services Office. It's working together, helping each other out. The probation staff provided extra landscaping outside and cleaning inside. In the past, the probation department has sent some of its clients to perform community services at the shelter, but Director Pat Berger felt this project would benefit his employees. Twice a year, we want to give back to the community, he said. We wanted to help get this place all squared away and clean and presentable. Lou Ann Holen, administrator for Decatur, Macon County Animal Control, provided the volunteers rules for the animals, cleaning areas, and animal rooms. They had access to the entire building and the animals. Our motto is donate, adopt, volunteer, Holland said. The more attention they get, the more adoptable they are. The animals were happy to see the volunteers. Tiffany Taliaferro, juvenile probation officer, had cats brushing up against her whenever she stood still. Because she considered herself a dog person, she tried to give them their space and kept cleaning. I'll be doing everything else that doesn't require one-on-one, she said. But I'll do anything I can do to help, even putting myself in harm's way. For many of the other volunteers, the cleaning and the yard work wasn't difficult. Leaving without an animal was the hard part. Investigation Supervisor Amy Smith found the tour of the facility heartbreaking. I wish I could take them all, she said. I know they get good care of them here, but they deserve better, where they're loved and taken care of. Walter approached the Decatur-Macon County Animal Shelter with caution before he agreed to volunteer. After his dog's recent death, after 14 years together, he knew the day would be difficult. I want to help, but I don't want to look at all the dogs and come home with one. I think I'm moving a lot of mulch, so I could avoid looking at them as much as I can. End of that article. Back to crime and courts. Deputies link teens to multiple burglaries. This is by Ryan Voyles. Decatur. 4 teens have been arrested for multiple robberies of two separate locations in southern Macon County. Dalton Johnson, 18, Jordan Ferris, 18, and Waylon Harris, 19, were arrested May 23rd on charges alleging their participation in the robberies of Dippin' Mervs in Blue Mound and Macon Speedway Track Enterprises in Macon between May 14th and May 23rd. A fourth teen, a 17-year-old juvenile, was also involved in the burglaries. Deputies of the Macon County Sheriff's Office were initially called to Dippin' Mervs on May 14th to investigate a burglary that occurred overnight that resulted in a safe and money being stolen. A deputy contracted out of Blue Mound recalled a car traveling at high speed near the area the night of the burglary, and video surveillance in the area showed the same car as the lone vehicle in the parking lot during the night. Deputies were told by Mawiqua Chief of Police that the vehicle belonged to a juvenile who had recently been arrested for a burglary at the local high school. 3 days later, deputies were called to the Macon Speedway Track Enterprise concerning a forced burglary and theft of two surveillance camera systems valued at over $1,000. Due to the similar method of forced entry, deputies considered the two robberies connected. On May 17th, the stolen safe from Dippin' Mervs was located in a body of water off of Hibbard Road on the east side of the bridge. Deputies also found a cellular phone, which was later tied to Ferris. The juvenile admitted to deputies that he, Ferris, and Harris were involved in the burglary and said that Ferris had lost his phone as the three of them dumped the safe in the creek. Hours after the Dippin' Mervs burglary, the juvenile and Ferris were observed by video surveillance entering the North Walmart in Decatur at around 1:35 a.m., where the juvenile is seen purchasing a large flat-screen television with cash. The juvenile admitted to police that he used the money to purchase a television and surround sound speakers, which were located at his residence. On May 23rd, Macon County Sheriff's detectives observed the same vehicle in the area of the Macon Speedway Track Enterprises building and later by Dippin' Mervs. Detectives made contact with the juvenile and Johnson as they were parked in the car in Mawiqua, where the two admitted they had committed burglaries at both locations. The juvenile and Johnson, along with Harris, allegedly admitted to deputies they had stolen about $200 worth of goods from Speedway and cookies and change from Dippin' Mervs. In regard to the stolen camera system, both the juvenile and Harris admitted they were currently in possession of them. Johnson is held in Macon County Jail on $25,000 bond, while Harris, who was released from prison in March after a prior burglary, charge, is in Macon County on a $60,000 bond. End of that article. Continuing with this local page, Crime in Courts, heated Facebook exchange ends badly. This is by Huey Freeman for the H&R. Decatur. Anthony Davis Reed, a 23-year-old Decatur man, is being held in jail on a $500,000 bond on a charge of attempted murder after he allegedly ran over a 50-year-old man with his vehicle, breaking a bone in his leg. The victim told police that Davis Reed threatened to shoot him and shoot up his house about 3 weeks ago. At that time, the victim only knew him by the name on his Facebook page, his real surname with a street name in front. He told police he knew Davis Reed because a woman he knew was friends with him. During an exchange of Facebook messages on Friday, Davis Reed challenged him to a fight. At about 8:30 p.m. Friday, Davis Reed drove to the victim's West Side residence. He and Anthony exchanged angry words with each other as he walked northbound along the side of the vehicle, said probable cause affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer Larry Brooks. As the vehicle pulled away, the victim continued to walk on the street behind the SUV. Anthony put the vehicle in reverse and rapidly accelerated toward him, Brooks wrote in a statement. As the SUV swerved to its left toward the victim, he jumped out of the way. The victim was now in front of the vehicle. As he stood near a fence, Davis Reed rapidly accelerated toward him. The SUV was traveling at a speed of about 30 to 35 miles per hour. He tried to jump out of the way, but his legs were struck by the front left corner of Anthony's vehicle. His right leg was pulled beneath the SUV as he fell to the ground. Davis Reed then pulled away, making a U-turn, and made one more pass at the victim. The victim could not stand, so he crawled on his hands and knees towards his house. Davis Reed drove onto the grass directly toward the victim. The victim rolled to his right to avoid being struck in the head and torso by Anthony's vehicle as they passed him. Davis Reed then drove off the scene. Four witnesses gave officers corroborating statements about the incident, and an officer observed tire tracks of a vehicle that entered the grass, then drove toward the pavement near a fence. The victim underwent surgery to repair a fractured right fibula, police said. Davis Reed is due in court for arraignment on Friday. End of that article. We'll finish section one of the June 1st Herald and Review here with Decatur Local Briefs. Candidate filings. Two candidates have filed to appear on the November general election ballot in Macon County. Daniel Hassinger has filed to be Republican candidate for state's attorney. The filing sets up a rematch of the 2012 race between Hassinger, a private attorney, and current state's attorney Jay Scott, who defeated Hassinger by more than 9,000 votes. Sue Clark has filed to be a Democratic candidate for the two-year term in Macon County Board District 5. Clark will go up against fellow Democrat Jeffrey Doyle and incumbent board members Deborah Kraft and Patricia Cox, both Republicans, for the two available seats. Tuesday was the last day that the Republican and Democratic parties could nominate a candidate and that candidates could file the necessary signatures to be on the ballot. Next, basic computer class. A basic computer class will be offered from 9 a.m. to noon beginning Monday, June 6th at the Decatur-Macon County Opportunities Corps, 1122 East Marietta Street. The class will meet Monday through Wednesday for 4 weeks. Training will include keyboarding, computer basics, Windows, Internet, and Microsoft Word and Excel. Students must meet eligibility guidelines for the free class. To apply, call 428-0155, 428-0155. Decatur again. Diabetes management. The Macon County Health Department will be offering an evidence-based diabetes self-management program that is open to the public. Participants will learn practical ways to deal with pain and fatigue, discover better nutrition and exercise choices, understand new treatment choices, and learn ways to talk with their doctor and family about their diabetes. Classes are held at the SIU School of Medicine Family Physician's Office, 102 West Wenwood Street, Suite 100, from 2:30 to 5 on Tuesdays for 6 weeks, beginning June 14th. The program is free and open to all affected by diabetes, including family and caregivers. For more information on the program and or to register, call Sally Williams or Robin Borelli at the Health Department, 423-6550, 423-6550. And now, crime and courts. Wait a minute. We just read that one. That's the end of the local updates. A couple last quick notes for both, for the state. Ex-police officer Peterson, convicted of seeking hitman. Chester, Illinois, AP. Jurors on Tuesday found former suburban Chicago police officer Drew Peterson guilty of trying to hire someone to kill the prosecutor who helped to convict him in the killing of his third wife. Peterson was convicted of trying to hire a fellow inmate's uncle while in prison to kill Will County State's Attorney James Glasgow, who helped convict Peterson in 2012 of killing ex-wife Kathleen Savio 8 years earlier. Prosecutors say Peterson believed that with Glasgow dead, he could win an appeal to his conviction. And then, lastly, automatic voter registration plan gets House okay. Voter registration bill sent to runner. Visitors to a handful of Illinois state agencies will be automatically registered to vote under legislation lawmakers were poised to send to Governor Bruce Rauner on Tuesday. The House approved the idea 86-30 on the final day of the General Assembly's spring session after days of tweaking it to make it palatable to state officials who must carry it out. The Senate must approve House changes before it goes to Rauner. With the Republican governor's approval, the Prairie State would join just four other states with automatic registration programs. End of that article. End of part one for June 1st, 2016, for the Decatur Herald and Review. Talk to you again soon.